Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the court. We have one case this morning, United States v. Downham. Because this is a TJAG certified case, the government will argue first as the appellant. Captain Scarpati, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the government?
Yes, Your Honor.
And Captain Bunch, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the appellee? Very well, then. Please proceed.
Chief Judge Olson, members of this court, may it please the court. My name is Captain Tony Scarpati, and I, along with Colonel Richard Guarini, represent the United States. Appellee's conviction is legally and factually sufficient. The Army Court erred in three significant ways. First, they misinterpreted and greatly expanded upon United States v. Campbell. Second, they compounded upon this error when they held that the expert's testimony otherwise lacked relevance without the admission of the underlying 2426. Third, their de novo factual sufficiency review failed to give appropriate deference to the fact finder and the fact that they heard and saw the live in-person witness testimony to include the expert, Dr. CO, and the appellee's testimony.
Now, Captain Scarpati, you just made reference to United States versus Campbell.
Yes, sir.
And how you believe that the CCA misapplied that case. But in your two briefs, you don't make any reference to United States versus Green. United States versus Green was decided after Campbell 1 and after Campbell 2. Why is that?
Your Honor, the reason is that the Army Court specifically relied on Campbell when it found that this underlying documentation was required. The Army Court essentially confused what the government believes is the necessary with the conditional. Campbell states that when the government introduces the underlying test results, the expert testimony is required to explain those results.
So are you saying that because this lower court only cited to Campbell, that we should not be looking at U.S. v. Green?
No, Your Honor. Certainly.
So in light of the fact that in Green, this court explicitly stated that because further questions arose out of Campbell 1 and Campbell 2, that it was necessary to, quote, provide fresh attention to the applicable principles regarding the litigation of your analysis cases. So again, why is that the Green case not directly on point, and yet you don't cite it in your briefs?
Your Honor, the government did not believe that Green had a did not create new law in the sense that it did not require the underlying testing documents to be admitted in order to make the...
Well, specifically in Green, what this court said was that in order for the permissible inference to be invoked, for the government to have the benefit of the permissible inference, that you needed two things. Your analysis result properly admitted, that's a quote from the court, and then accompanied by expert testimony that interprets that. So why isn't Green controlling, and why isn't Green dispositive of the issue before us?
Yes, Your Honor, for two reasons. One, the government believes that here the urinalysis result was properly admitted. It was properly admitted through the testimony of the expert. That testimony was unobjected to, and as this court has pointed out numerous times.
I don't really understand. So where is it in the record?
At JA, I believe it's in the 130s, Your Honor. It's where the expert provides that the test, the evidence.
No, the record. No, the test. Where's the test in the record? You just said it was properly admitted, so let's clarify that. Where is the test in the record?
Through the testimony, Your Honor. So the
So the test is not in the record, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
We have someone who didn't do the test, who says she saw the results of the test, described those results. That's what we have in the record. And it's not a fact witness, it's an expert witness, right?
It's an expert witness, yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so I think the fundamental problem in this case is we have Campbell and we have Green that talk about how you prove wrongfulness once you've proven that someone has drugs in their system or has used drugs. But we don't have the proof that someone used drugs in this case. Like before we even get to wrongfulness, what is the proof in the record that the other side can challenge or that we can review on appellate review to decide whether or not the appellant, that the accused used drugs?
Yes, Your Honor. So in this case, we had the UPL, Staff Sergeant AP, who testified that appellant actually conducted this test. We have Sergeant KL, who said that he watched appellant provide a specimen into a bottle. We have the third chain of custody witness who said that she maintained control of it and sent it to the lab. Then we have Dr. CO's testimony saying that it was properly received by the lab. Then we have the chain of custody documents, Prosecution Exhibit 3, which has signed for at the lab and opened and properly maintained at the lab. Then we have Dr. CO saying that she reviewed the underlying litigation packet and that that evidence, along with the specimen bottle that was actually admitted into evidence, all showed that it was appellant sample that was provided to Staff Sergeant AP at the September 13th urinalysis that tested positive for cocaine. So that would be the totality of evidence, Your Honor, here that would suggest that this evidence was legally sufficient.
So like, right, it's textbook all the way up to the last step, but we don't have the results.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I would disagree that
But we don't have them. We don't have the results. We have the testimony of someone who says they saw the results. But that's not really how litigation works, is it?
Your Honor, what would the court suggest that the underlying paper results would be? Would it be the Prosecution Exhibit 8 for identification? Because if it is the case, that's what the Army Court said it was, the government would suggest that Tierman specifically stated that Prosecution Exhibit 8 was cumulative with the testimony of the expert. That Tierman was not overruled by Green, at least the government does not understand it to be so. On JA-107...
Did the paper your analysis results go back with the panel?
Not the Prosecution Exhibit 8 for identification.
So why is that?
Well, Your Honor, under Tierman...
I'm asking a question, Captain Scarpati.
Yes,
why did the paper your analysis results not go back to the panel?
And from reading the record, Your Honor, on JA-107, when the trial counsel admits Prosecution Exhibit 3, the DD Form 2426 chain of custody documents, he specifically references Tierman, in which says the underlying chain of custody documents are admissible and were properly admitted as business record exceptions. However, the conclusory summary of the DD Form 2426, which the ACCA specifically references in this case, the LAN plus DOD ID number plus cocaine positive, that was a conclusory summary and was inadmissible, but was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt because it was sufficiently cumulative with the expert testimony stating so.
So the panel did not have access to that exhibit, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
Because it was not admitted.
Yes, Your Honor. And the government's position is that it was not admitted because the trial counsel likely did a careful reading of Tierman, which they cite at JA-107, and did not think it was admissible based on the precedent of this court.
So does Green refer to Tierman, or does it simply say that in order to have, for the government to have the benefit of the permissible inference, that you have to have admitted your analysis results?
Your Honor, my understanding is that admitting the urinalysis results would also include the testimony, especially when it's unobjected to, of the expert witness. And that's a fair interpretation of Green and Tierman. So when the expert testified that the urinalysis results were 295 BZE, that was the admission of the urinalysis results. And that's a fair interpretation of Tierman and Green and other precedent of this court in which it failed to distinguish, says the distinguishing point between paper documents and witness testimony, there is none, especially when it's not objected to, and especially when the entire line of case law emphasizes the importance of the expert testimony over these paper documents.
This seems like this. Can we admit all evidence? Admit, if you're going to use the word that way, which I don't think is that's how it works. But should we just launder all the evidence through an expert then and not give any of it to the jury? Just say, like, just trust Dr. Jones. They looked at the evidence. You don't need to look at it. The doctor looked at it.
No, Your Honor.
Then what are we doing? If that's not how litigation works, if that's not how we launder evidence into the jury, Why would we do it in this instance?
Well, in this particular case, Your Honor, an important aspect is that this evidence was unchallenged. And the Supreme Court specifically admonished against magnifying issues on appeal that were of little importance at the trial. They, in the opening statement, acknowledging that is not evidence, recognized that the cocaine was found in his system and specifically stated this is not a case about whether cocaine was in his system. He also seemed to accept that proposition during his direct examination.
But the government's failure to admit the evidence has made it a case about whether or not there was cocaine in the system.
Not at trial, Your Honor. At trial, it was accepted that it was in his system, yet the defense of innocent ingestion was the main contention at trial.
Counsel, you say the evidence was unchallenged. Suppose the defense had made an objection to the statement by the expert as to what the results were. They might have made lack of personal knowledge or the best evidence rule. Would those generally have been successful objections?
Perhaps, Your Honor. However, the government does believe that Tierman is clear that the proper way to admit the ultimate opinion, the ultimate conclusion, perhaps the underlying charts or data may be relevant to admit for the panel to show the scientific methodology was appropriate, but the underlying conclusion that, in fact, the entirety of the test showed that it was positive for cocaine was appropriately given through the opinion of an expert. Everything else, all the machine-generated data, all the documents are merely a small pieces of what a person actually did in the testing. Acknowledging here this was a surrogate expert, but because it was not relying on testimonial evidence, but rather relying on the machine-generated data, the appropriate form of presenting this evidence to the fact finder was through the expert opinion of the witness.
Can we switch grounds and sure. Can you address the appellee's argument that all this argumentation about the test results is irrelevant because the CCA had an independent ground for vacating the findings and sentence, which was that that it wasn't convinced that the government had proved beyond a reasonable doubt that there wasn't innocent ingestion?
Yes, Your Honor. So, firstly, assuming this court agrees with the government that there was an error in the legal sufficiency analysis, the government would request that this court conduct its own de novo legal sufficiency review, which would require this court to look at every element of Campbell to include the innocent ingestion defense, and therefore it is properly captured under the first assignment of error. Secondly, Your Honor, upon a close review of the opinion of the Army Court, the government acknowledges that the innocent ingestion paragraph likely did not fall under their legal sufficiency analysis. Part of the confusion is that the Army Court failed to distinguish what aspects of their opinion was the legal sufficiency analysis and which aspects were their factual sufficiency analysis. But in preparation for oral argument, the government did notice several indicators that, in fact, the innocent ingestion insufficiency was a factual one and not a legal one. First, it comes directly after the block quote of the factual sufficiency. And second, it's actually referring directly to a Gras Stefan matter of appellant in which he challenges the factual sufficiency of the innocent ingestion and the wrongfulness. And then third, the language they used, the government did not prove it beyond a reasonable doubt, is much more towards factual sufficiency than any rational fact finder could have found beyond a reasonable doubt, which would be the legal sufficiency. So those three key points would say that that actual portion of the government's argument and of the ACCA's analysis should fall under the factual sufficiency. And therefore, even if this court finds that it's moot under the first or not properly captured under the first assignment of error, it is certainly captured under the third assignment of error. Which would bring me to my third issue here, which is that the Army Court failed to give appropriate deference to both the fact that the fact finder heard the expert's testimony and gave it credit, and importantly here, that they heard Apelli's testimony at trial. They heard his incredible explanation of innocent ingestion, and in combination with the expert's testimony, was more than enough to give the panel the reasonable inference that there was not innocent ingestion. So therefore, even if the expert's testimony on its own was insufficient for the fact finder to make this permissible inference, when you combine it with the appellee's testimony, especially the fact that his alibi witness, his corroborating witness, contradicted or failed to corroborate his testimony on the stand in front of the trier of fact, those were important aspects that showed that his reasonable ingestion or innocent ingestion defense was not reasonable. The Army Court showed
Captain,
that...
Yes, can I get back to this earlier issue we talked about regarding the expert's testimony? Now, when an expert testifies without objection and is qualified, and they testify under 703, aren't those facts that are in evidence at that point? I mean, I don't understand the distinction that is being made between, you know, oral testimony and documentary evidence. To me, facts are facts and evidence is evidence.
Yes, Your Honor.
So once the facts are in, isn't it a question of weight at that point?
Yes, Your Honor.
In other words, the prosecution, it seems to me, takes a risk by not putting in the documentary evidence because the members who might be used to seeing documentary evidence would say, hey, wait a minute, there's something missing here, and we're not going to find the accused guilty because of that. So that's the risk as far as the weight of the evidence, it seems to me, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor. That's the check on this, is the panel. And that's the problem with this ruling, is ACCA substituted their judgment for the panel's. They did so explicitly when they said that the expert's testimony lacked relevance. Webster's dictionary defines lacked as deficient or missing. They made that judgment, and they didn't give appropriate deference to the fact finder when doing so, and they failed to give appropriate deference to the fact finder when overturning this conviction.
So, Captain, at the CCA ruled they did not have the benefit of its court's decision in Harvey, nor had the Supreme Court ruled on Smith versus Arizona, which supports the point that Judge Sparks just made. So in light of that, then, what is the government's recommendation with regards to certified issue 3?
Yes, Your Honor.
Are you requesting the court to do?
Yes, Your Honor. I see my time has expired.
Proceed.
Answer. Thank you, Your Honor. Firstly, Your Honor, although they did not have the benefit of United States v. Harvey, they did have the benefit of the amended statute. They failed, other than a block quote, to reference any of the language from that amended statute in their analysis, so much so that it's difficult to discern which parts they're talking about factual sufficiency and which parts they're talking about legal sufficiency. For that reason alone, the government would suggest that, at the very least, this court should remand to the lower court to clearly delineate which parts of their testimony they're finding to be legally insufficient and which parts they're finding to be factually insufficient. Regarding Smith v. Arizona, Your Honor, although there are some applicable aspects of that case potentially, ultimately this jurisprudence has found that the underlying urinalysis results are non-testimonial, which was the crucial aspect of Smith v. Arizona, and because we do things in the military in an for administrative purposes to ensure everyone's ready to serve, the underlying evidentiary collection of this evidence and production of this evidence would not meet the same standards that in Smith v. Arizona, in which they found drugs and were testing the drugs for probable cause, that was testimonial, and therefore they are highly distinguishable. And so Smith v. Arizona would not directly apply to this case, Your Honor,
okay,
in the government's opinion.
Any further questions from the bench? Seeing none, Captain Scarpati, at the beginning of your presentation, you did not reserve any time, correct?
I did, Your Honor. I reserved 4 minutes.
4 minutes?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. You did not request it from the court.
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I will grant it to you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I did not realize that. My apologies.
Captain Bunch.
Chief Judge Olson, members of the court, may it please the court. In a positive urinalysis case, you need a positive urinalysis. This court's precedent is that a positive urinalysis explained by expert testimony permits the consideration of a permissive inference that the presence of a controlled substance demonstrates knowledge and wrongful use. In this case, the government failed to establish that permissive inference. The government did not present the urinalysis result and did not have their expert provide context or explain appellee's urinalysis results to the fact finder.
What about the argument that there's a distinction without a difference here, that in fact the urinalysis results came in based on the testimony of the expert witness? She just didn't solely testify that he tested positive. She said test positive at 297. The cutoff is this and so forth. Why doesn't that result in the urinalysis results having been admitted into evidence?
Based on this court's precedent, Your Honor, there's a trilogy of cases that basically goes back to the Murphy standard that an expert needs to interpret and provide context to the urinalysis results. In this case, the expert did not do that. The government did not ask the proper questions to establish that permissive inference. For example, the government did not provide any information about the test itself, whether it was regarded scientifically sound, the testing methodologies. The government failed to get that evidence from the expert.
So then, are you really focusing on what could be referred to as the second prong of the requirement under Green? In other words, under Green, it refers to admitted urinalysis and then proper interpretation of those results by the expert witness. Are you really saying, regardless of the issue of the admission of the paper urinalysis test, that the reason the conviction fails in this case is because the interpretation provided to the panel members by the expert witness was insufficient?
That's a two-part answer to that question, Your Honor. The first answer is, our position is we do believe it needs to be admitted. However, in this case, especially in this case, there is no interpretation or context provided to the fact finder, which is that second prong in Green that we are focusing on, because that is the main issue in this case that the government failed to do.
Okay. Then what I'd like to do is separate those two, for lack of a better word, prongs here. In terms of admissibility, I know I just asked you this, but just to focus solely on that, if an expert witness provides testimony, not only of the opinion of that expert witness, but instead provides direct testimony about what the document says, for instance, 297, that's what the report says, that's what the expert witness testified to. Does that fulfill the requirement of Green?
No, Your Honor, it doesn't.
And why is that?
And to get to Your Honor's point, that's basically smuggling in evidence just from the expert without actually having the documents for the fact finder to review themselves.
So in other words, the results need to go back to the panel. Why? Why is that an important distinction? Why does that matter as compared to saying, well, government, if you did not admit that evidence, and that evidence, the physical evidence, does not go back with the panel, that may redound to your detriment, government, because the panel may give less weight to it. Why is the weight not the issue rather than it's a requirement that the paper results go back?
Yes, Your Honor. It's important to have, it's law to have both. President has cited that you need both the year analysis and the expert testimony. This case is different because we do not have the year analysis. The government has not cited any case law that is similar to this situation itself. There's no case law that we are aware of that is similar to this situation, but based on the court's precedent, we do know that we need both the year analysis and the expert testimony to go back.
Counsel, is that the case, or is it just that in those cases there was an admitted year analysis report? In other words, in those cases the report was in, so the opinions and the lawful and the legal rules that were being decided in those cases, we're talking about a case where the actual document had been admitted. But it didn't really have to talk about whether it's required,
yes,
did it?
Yes, Your Honor. And to clarify, when I say required, I'm talking about in a specific case like this where it's based on a positive.
You just said we don't have a case like this.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Your Honor. To clarify, when I said that a positive year analysis test is required for a case that is based on a year analysis test. And when I said that we do not have a case like this.
But we've never said that. You admit that we've never said that, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
To clarify my point, when I say we do not have a case like this, I'm talking about when we have admitted expert testimony evidence, but not admitted year analysis, a positive year analysis. We do not have a positive year analysis admitted evidence in this particular case.
But you have evidence of a positive year analysis, right, from the expert who gave unobjected to testimony, isn't that right?
Yes, Your Honor. We have admitted evidence from the expert that states the your analysis result. However, based on case law, specifically the Murphy standards, the expert failed to interpret and provide context to the fact finder for them to have that permissive, reasonable inference.
Thank you. I'm not beating up on you. I just wanted to know what your position was.
Counsel, could you explain the application of the Green case to this particular litigation?
Yes, Your Honor. So in U.S. v. Green, this court stated that the Campbell three-prong results standard is not mandatory. They clarified the distinction in Campbell because it was regarding to a novel evidentiary test that was used to come to that result. So in Green, they basically clarified the position, regardless of if the evidentiary scientific evidence is novel or not, there is still a requirement if you do have that your analysis, expert testimony is still required to interpret the your analysis results to the fact finder. So in comparison to this case, that is what was lacking in this case, Your Honor.
So, counsel, as the chief judge, I think, noted, then in breaking out the two prongs, is it your position that really this is hinging on the lack of a proper interpretation by the expert, not so much the admission or non-admission of paper evidence? Because, as you said, Green specifically says there is no mandatory foundational requirement. Judge Efron's majority opinion. You know, kind of I read it as the three no mandatories. And so that's the first one. So is your position then hinging on the proper interpretation of the results and the in your view that the expert did not properly interpret it for the fact finder?
Yes, Your Honor, that is the strongest point in this case, that the government failed to provide adequate context to the urinalysis result from the expert.
Counsel, could you respond to the government's argument that we need to send this case back for a new factual sufficiency review? And as I was listening to counsel, I think there were two points that stuck in my mind. One was that the CCA was somewhat vague about whether it was conducting some of its statements. It was unclear whether they were talking about factual or legal sufficiency. And then secondly, they didn't show deference to the trier of fact with respect to the accused's own testimony. Do we have to send back for a new factual sufficiency review for clarification on those points?
No, Your Honor, and that is because the Army Court did provide an appropriate analysis under Harvey.
Captain Bunch, can you just please move the microphone closer? Thank you.
They did provide a proper legal analysis under Harvey, and specifically when it comes to the appellee's testimony, Your Honor, the Army Court did give appropriate deference to the evidence, and they found as fact it just was not enough to fill the deficiency in proof for the appellee's testimony. Pending any questions.
Any questions from the bench? Seeing none, thank you, Captain Bunch.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Captain Scarpati.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Now, as you begin, I'd like you please to address one point. In regard to the distinction between the evidence being admitted as paper urinalysis results as compared to it being based on the testimony of the expert witness, with the expert witness approach, it could be referred to as close enough for government work. But how does that square with United States versus Graham from this court, where it said because of the potentially life-altering effects of urinalysis, positive urinalysis, where there could be not a smidgen more of evidence against an accused service member, and the fact that it could result not only in the end of the service of that service member, dismissal, could be bad conduct, or depending on how it's handled, bad conduct, discharge, so forth, for enlisted, that this court said, quote, we should zealously guard the uses of these results and hold the government to the highest standards of proof required by law. So if we're saying that, then why should we not say, government, if you want the benefit of the permissive inference, you need to introduce the paper your analysis results?
Yes, Your Honor. United States v. Graham, firstly, was when about a case that when only the underlying documentary evidence was introduced and there was no expert testimony. That's when they were zealously guarding that aspect of law. Secondly, Your Honor, United States v. Tierman came out in 2012, 11 years after United States v. Green. So to the extent that United States v. Green, when they said a your analysis properly admitted under the standards applicable to scientific evidence when accompanied by expert testimony, provide the interpretation required to provide a legally sufficient basis to draw the permissible inference, that wasn't taking into account that 11 years later, this court said that the underlying documentary evidence was cumulative with the expert testimony. And this court specifically referred to the exact same document, Prosecution Exhibit 8 for ID, or in footnote 2 of Tierman, the DD Form 2624, when they made that finding.
Captain Tierman, I'm sorry, Captain Scarpati.
Yes, Your Honor.
I apologize. As I recall Tierman, and I have to admit I don't have it in front of me, but I thought that one of the distinctions with regards to Tierman was the testimonial portions of the form, the DD form, versus the factual portions of the form.
Yes, Your Honor. So that's the assertion that Apelli made in their brief, and that was incorrect. Block Hotel refers to the swearing of the authenticity and the validity. Block Golf, as is noted in footnote 2 and in the substance of the brief of Tierman, specifically refers to the exact same line that the Army Court found was required in this case that Tierman said was actually inadmissible under Tierman. The government is aware of no recent authority since Tierman that said that Prosecution Exhibit 8-4 identification was admissible, especially not that it was had more value or provided value or took away value through the admission of the expert's testimony. And therefore, Tierman, which the trial counsel specifically cited when they were admitting other documents, is the reason that the trial counsel likely did not admit this exhibit and the reason why this court should reverse and affirm for legal sufficiency.
So, counsel, I don't have Tierman in front of me either, but I have in my notes that one of the reasons the court held it was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt because that the machine-generated data was properly admitted. Is that not accurate?
Correct, Your Honor. What they said was that the expert relied on the machine-generated data in giving their opinion.
But I thought it said, yes, the expert relied on it, but that portion, the machine-generated part of the report, was properly admitted. That's how the court described it. Are my notes wrong, or is that description by the court wrong?
No, Your Honor. That is correct. In some of the facts section, they don't talk specifically which documents, but they do talk that some documents are admitted. I see my time has expired. May I finish answering
Please proceed.
The question? That the graphs, there's no specific document that the court referenced that, hey, this was the document that needed to be admitted. What they do say is the expert's testimony is what was crucial, and that the other evidence that was not admitted was cumulative with that expert's testimony. That's what Tierman stood for, that's the guidance to the field, and that's likely what trial counsel relied upon when they did not admit this evidence. This court should...
Further questions from the bench? Please, briefly.
Just that this court should reverse and affirm the legal sufficiency and remand for factual sufficiency. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Case is now submitted. The court thanks counsel for both sides, and the court will stand adjourned until further order of the court.
Court is adjourned until further order of the court.